This podcast is part of the Erotica Podcast Network, which includes the Erotica Podcast, Erotica Sci-Fi and Fantasy, Erotica Loving Wives, the Spotify podcast Erotica Taboo, and the E.P. and Non-Erotic Podcast. Both the Erotica Podcast and the Erotica Taboo Podcast offer $2 subscriptions with bonus episodes. Links for everything are in the podcast description. This podcast contains mature content and is intended for an adult audience only. It contains explicit words, thoughts, and ideas. The content of all stories is fiction with any similarities to real people or events being purely coincidental. This podcast is not intended for anything but entertainment of the listener, and if you do not agree with the themes listed in the tags, please do not listen to the story. All characters engaging in sexual relationships or activities are 18 years old or older. This story was found on a free website and brought to audio form here. I did not write and take no credit for this story. Please visit the link in the comments to further support this author. The Rookie by Cat 5. I heard the bellow through the half-open door of Sergeant Talon's office. Morris, get your ass in here. My 5'11" untangled itself from the desk and I walked through his door and said. A little voice said that you were looking for me. Is that true, Harry? Harry laughed. If you weren't so fucking lazy you would have taken the sergeant's test 2 years ago, and you could be yelling too. I didn't answer. We both knew he was right, but the fact was that I loved the street. Being made a sergeant meant 1 foot was off the street, 1 promotion later there would be no street. What's up? I asked to change the subject. Harry answered. I'm making you the field training officer of a rookie right out of the academy. I wasn't surprised. With my experience, Harry often asked me to be the FTO for Metro West, which was our division. I didn't mind since it broke up the boredom of the day, and sometimes I thought I actually did help the rookies start out to be better cops. Harry continued. Officer Phelan should be here within the hour. Her dad worked the job for 30 years mostly in Metro North. He only retired a few years ago. Her? I asked. Harry grinned. I think the first name is Laura. Good luck. I counsel you to read all the regulations on sexual harassment, Joe. I wouldn't want you to get in any trouble that you couldn't handle. I gave him the finger without saying anything more and walked out of the office back to my desk. No angel of mercy had appeared during my short visit with Harry. My paperwork was still there waiting for me. 30 minutes later I heard someone knocking on Harry's door. I looked up and spotted the knocker. Her back was to me, brown hair cut short in a pageboy style, broad square shoulders with no slouch, very nice hips curving into a very, very nice ass, and long legs. I guess she was 5'7" or so. I thought, if you were a detective, Officer Morris, I think you just saw 50% of your new partner. 3 minutes later I heard a female voice say, Officer Morris? I looked up. Brown, serious eyes, nice face, exceptional breasts. She repeated. Are you Officer Morris? Guilty. I replied. Let me detect. Would you be Officer Phelan by any chance? Yes, sir. She replied. First mistake. I said with a grin. The sir is in the office you just left. I'm Joe. And what should I call you, officer? She grinned back in relief. Laura would be fine. I continued. Let's hit the street, Laura. Sign out a car and meet me in the parking area. Laura said. Yes, sir. And then seeing the look on my face quickly said. I mean, I'll sign out the car, Joe. Minutes later I held out my hands for the keys and said. I'll drive half the shift and then let you drive the second half. We got in and I headed out to the beltway for Laura's first lesson. 10 minutes later I accelerated up the entry ramp and kept the car in the right-hand lane going the speed limit of 55. I asked Laura. Why did you join the department? Laura answered. It's in the family. My dad worked Metro North for 30 years and finally retired. My brother was signed up for the academy 2 years ago, but he was killed in a car accident, so it was almost ordained that I would replace him. I probably would have joined the department anyway. Dad says it's in our blood. I asked, how did you do in the academy? Laura replied, I came in second out of 45. I did well in almost everything except for unarmed combat. Relative to the guys, I lack upper body strength, and that hurt me. I paused for a second as a mile marker flashed by the car and then said, I can give you a few tips on unarmed combat if you want. The secret is to use. I abruptly put on the flashers and pulled to the side of the road well clear of traffic. Laura tensed up and looked around searching for the reason for the stop. Her eyes looked at me confused. I said, Laura, we just saw a car sideswipe another car right in front of us. One car is turned over. Call it in. Laura looked around searching for the accident. I quietly said, pretend, Laura, pretend. She reached for the microphone and asked me, where are we? I replied, I don't know, pretend I'm not even in the car. Now Laura was confused. But if I don't know where we are, how can I call it in? I said nothing. The silence lasted 20 seconds or so and Laura said, I guess my job is to know where I am, right, Joe? Yep, I replied. We might be having a great conversation on who is going to win next week's football game, or telling each other jokes, but you have to always know where you are. The beltway is easy, there are mile markers. With a little effort you will start to remember them automatically. Until that happens, you have to concentrate. Now we just passed mile marker 138. Pretend to call it in. She pretended and made all the rookie mistakes. Number of people involved. Special equipment needed, direction the vehicles were going. She wasn't that bad, she was just a rookie. After 30 minutes or so I pulled out into traffic again and arrived at my favorite speed trap. It was by a viaduct. I pulled the car and so we were facing the traffic coming at us. The cars were coming around a curve and our car was in a little valley, so it usually took 5 seconds or so for the cars to spot the squad. I told Laura to take the driver's seat and turn on the radar unit while I got into the passenger side. I asked, Laura, you are going into traffic court to testify against a whole bunch of speeders you wrote up. What's the first thing that you are going to need?
That's easy, Laura replied.
I have to have available a certification when the last time the radar was calibrated.
Give the lady a prize, I replied.
Now pretend I'm the judge and you are testifying against the first speeder. What do you say? Laura thought for a moment and said, Well, I guess I would say something like, Judge, the radar said the defendant was doing 72 miles per hour in a 55 mile per hour zone and...
Nope,
I interrupted. She looked at me puzzled. I continued, Judge, I observed the defendant doing what I estimated to be 72 miles per hour in a 55 mile per hour zone, and checked my observation with the radar unit, and it confirmed my observation. Laura was still confused, so I said, Depending on the judge and the defense counsel, the radar unit can still be attacked many ways. This way you made the observation, and the unit backed you up. It is much more difficult for them to wiggle out of the ticket that way. Laura asked, But aren't you lying when you say it that way, that you observed someone going 72? I pointed at a red car coming around the corner and said, 64. What's the radar say?
65.
Replied Laura. I continued, Green car, 70. Laura answered in a surprised voice,
70.
You can really do that. I answered, In a few months, you will be able to do that too. It just takes practice. I'm generally within 2 miles per hour either way over 95% of the time, which is about average for the traffic guys. Let's spend 30 minutes here. First guess the speed and then check the radar. We are not going to ticket anyone unless they are outrageous, so don't worry about it. Just try to guess the speed correctly. We spent 30 minutes with Laura guessing the speeds. I spent 30 minutes checking out her breasts. Since I was an experienced officer, she never caught me. If she could read my mind, the politically correct sex police would have put me away for a good number of years. At the end of 30 minutes, Laura's grouping was 4 miles per hour either way. I knew she would improve on that with practice. Time for a stop, I thought, and then maybe a lunch break. I took the wheel again and watched the traffic coming at us. Finally, I said, White car, Laura, how fast?
70.
She answered,
71.
I guessed out loud. I looked at the radar.
70.
I admitted. You are about to write your first ticket. I hit the flashers and swung the car in a tight turn to chase the speeder. A few miles later, we pulled behind the white car, which was now going a very proper 54 miles per hour, which of course was much too late. He pulled over onto the grass and I pulled the squad behind him slightly closer to the pavement. I said, Laura, I will back you up, but pretend you are by yourself. Write up a speeding citation. We both got out of the car. I came up the passenger side and checked the inside, only the driver. Laura walked up to the driver who had rolled down the window. She said all the right things and went back to our unit to check out the car and the driver. I stood in front of the unit listening to her call it in and watching the driver. Finally, Laura got out of our car and stood beside me as she said, He owns the car. No wants or warrants, but he really is nervous. I replied, Did you write up the speeding citation? She said,
Yes.
I continued, Well, why don't you ask his permission for you to search his car? This time I stood behind Laura on the driver's side. I had also noticed the guy was a little kinky, so I unsnapped my holster and eased my Glock out, hiding it behind my leg. She went up to the car and I was impressed when she asked the driver, Mr. Brown, you have to sign the citation. It is not an admission of guilt, only an acknowledgement that you received it. By the way, you don't have any atomic bombs or biological weapons in your car, do you? Brown, of course, said,
No, officer.
Laura continued, Then you don't mind if I take a minute or two to search your car, do you? Brown agreed. When presented that way, almost everyone agrees, even if they have something to hide. Academy teaching must have gone up a notch, I thought. Laura asked the man to get out of the car. He did. She presented the citation to him, and he signed it. She gave Mr. Brown his copy of the citation and his driver's license back. She leaned into the car to check the seats, the ashtray, and the floors. I raised my voice and said, Laura, that's enough. We have to get back to the station. She looked at me confused and then nodded. She told Brown to slow it down and have a nice day. We went back to the unit and sat down. I said nothing. Finally, Laura said, I screwed up, didn't I?
Yep,
I said. Two pretty big time ones. She thought for 30 seconds or so and then said,
Joe?
Actually, they were big time mistakes, but experienced officers make the same ones. They just get lazy. I said,
First, I agree with you. That guy was too nervous for just a speeding ticket. I was betting that there was some wants or warrants for him, but you said no. So I figured he had something in the car.
Your instinct was good. Probably some pot, but who knows? Why didn't you let me search then? Asked Laura. Laura, anything you found in that car would have been thrown out in court unless he had a rookie lawyer. So once you blew that, why waste time searching the car? Besides, you were dead anyway.
What?
She gasped. I grinned. That's why I like being an FTO. It boosts my ego. I said, Laura, you did a great job of getting him to agree to the search, but you made a key mistake. You asked his permission before you gave him his license back.
There have been several court cases in this state that ruled if you hold the license and ask permission to search, it is deemed to be a form of blackmail. I won't give you your license unless you agree to the search. So when you asked him, he was home free. And of course you were dead too. Laura was confused, as I knew she would be. Describe what happened when you went back to the car. Laura answered. Well, I asked him to get out of the car. He stood by the back side window and signed the ticket on the hood of his car. I gave him the citation and his license, and then I started searching his car. I prompted. Describe physically what you did just after you handed him his license. Laura said. Why, I turned to lean into the front seat and was checking out the ashtray when you... I interrupted. Do you want to be dead by being shot with the gun that he had under his shirt, or with the knife that was in his pocket? She said. But you were there. Oops, you weren't there. And I turned my back on Mr. Brown while he was 2 feet from me. Right? Yep. I said. We cops make a lot of mistakes on the job. Most of the time we are lucky and nothing happens. But every now and then we make a mistake and we are unlucky, then we get hurt. Or worse. Let's go have lunch. I'm hungry after all this policing stuff. By the end of the day, when I thought Laura was going to be a good cop. She picked up things easily, wasn't afraid to ask questions, and never made the same mistake twice. 3 more times I tried the where are you trick, and she nailed the location all 3 times. I was going to enjoy teaching the rookie, but there was a problem. The rookie was too good looking. As she was concentrating on doing what I told her to do, I was concentrating on her. She was a winner. Hands off. I told myself. How long? Myself answered back. A week went by and Laura was learning fast. My initial guess was proving itself out. She was going to be a good cop. I was leaving the station that night when I heard a man's voice say, Joe Morris? I turned and saw an older man about 60 standing in front of me. I looked at him and said, I'm Joe. He said, I'm Mike Phelan. Laura is my daughter. She says you're a good teacher. I answered, she's a good learner. You should be proud of her. I am. He replied, although I worry about her. I worked the job a long time. I loved it and brought up my son to love it too. And then he got killed in the car accident. I don't know if Laura joined because she wanted to, or because she knew how bad I hurt that a Phelan wouldn't continue in law enforcement. Did she tell you that my father was a cop too? I nodded and said, Laura is going to be good. I'm going to teach her everything I know to keep her safe. Don't second guess why she joined. Just see what happens. Mike answered. My wife died a few years ago. It is just Laura and me now, so I guess I'm being a little too protective. I checked with Sergeant Allen. He said you are good. I just wanted to meet you. Thanks for taking care of her. I nodded and he walked away. Several months went by and Laura continued to improve. We had slipped into an easy relationship. I asked her about most things as she did to me. My problem continued to be keeping my hands off her. One time I asked her what her boyfriend thought of her job. She said, my boyfriend used to hate the idea that I was a cop. And now he accepts it. I said, now he isn't my boyfriend anymore. Laura replied. A few weeks went by and Laura took me up on my offer to check out her shooting mechanics and to go over unarmed combat techniques. It was our day off and we met at the academy indoor shooting range. She was dressed in a short sleeve blouse and some slacks that confirmed my initial observation that she had a wonderful ass. We went through the normal safety checks when we got to the shooting booth. I said, Laura, assume your shooting position and let me see how it looks. Laura took our standard 3-point position, both legs spread, knees slight bent, both arms outstretched and one hand cupping the other holding the gun. I noticed 2 things right away. She really did have a very cute ass and her firing position was perfect. I said, Laura, you have a pretty good firing position. Let me adjust it a tad and it will be perfect. I walked up behind her and leaned over her. My arm went out and my hand gripped one of hers as I changed her grip about 1/4 inch. My head was next to hers as I smelled her hair and her wisp of perfume. And then of course her ass was pushing into my pelvis, but that couldn't be helped either. I said, stand up and relax and then take your firing position again. Her position was still perfect, but then, it was before I touched her. I continued, most shootings happen within 15 feet of the 2 people involved. Set the target for 15 feet and start shooting. Laura pulled the pulley system and her target went back 15 feet. She assumed the position and fired away. Her magazine emptied as she fired in a deliberate, steady routine. She pulled the target in. Her grouping was perfect, all centers. I was surprised, even good cops miss a center every now and then. I said, good shooting. Now set the target for 25 feet. It was a repeat. She hit centers with every shot. I looked at the target and then I looked at her. She had a little smile on her face and then said, Dad has been taking me out to the range since I was 16. I'm usually pretty accurate. I thought, what a smart ass dot she could have least have told me. But then if she had, I wouldn't have been able to correct her firing position. We messed around a little more on the firing range, and then went up to the gym. Laura came out of the female locker room in sweatshirt and pants. I was dressed the same way. I went over many of the basics with her, and we tried a few holds. Finally I said, a very common problem is when someone grabs you from behind. If you are taken by surprise, you need to move quick or you get deeper into shit very quickly. I'm going to come up behind you and grab you. And then talk about the 3 ways to break the hold. I moved behind her and reached around her. One of my hands gripped the wrist of my other hand as my arms held her just below her breasts. In fact, my wrists were pleasantly feeling the bottom of her breasts as I held her in the grip. We went over the three possible moves she could make, and when I thought I couldn't keep this up much longer, her breasts were very soft against my wrists. Her hair against my face, I told her to make her move. She did well. We went to other combat situations. And then back to the behind grab position. Once again, her breasts were softly pressing into my clenched hands. When I suggested we try the same move a third time, Laura looked at me and said, "Again?" I answered, "You should practice this move until you have it down perfect." We went on to a grab technique. The bad guy has something and the officer grabs the arm. If the bad guy pulls the officer, the technique is to knee the person in the thigh just where a very sensitive pressure point is located. If done correctly, the leg is paralyzed for 5 or more seconds. The person is immobilized. I strapped on a thigh shield to absorb the blow and told Laura to try it. She grabbed my arm. I pulled my arm back as she came into me. Her knee came up to strike my thigh to immobilize me, and I felt a sharp, agonizing streak of intense pain. Laura had missed my thigh. She had kneed me in the balls. I heard her say, "Oh my God, I'm sorry, Joe. Are you okay?" My hands were on my knees. My brain was deciding whether to throw up or just pass out. All the while I heard Laura's scared voice repeating, "Joe, are you okay? I'm so sorry." Minutes later the pain was receding. Pain was reduced to embarrassment. My partner had almost put me out for the count. Once the pain receded, my brain started to function. Laura wouldn't have done that because of my behind-the-back grip, would she? She sounded very sincere, very worried whether I would be crippled for life. I knew it had been an accident until she said, "Maybe we better try it again. You told me I have to practice each move until I have it down perfect." I admitted it to myself. This little female shit had put me in my place just because I happened to love feeling her breasts. Lesson learned. I thought as we left the gym floor. A week later we got a call of a hit and run, or maybe a better description was a hit and stagger. A drunk driver tried to park in front of his house and hit a neighbor's car. The drunk ignored the dent and staggered into his house. We drove to the address and the neighbor was waiting for us. He was a good witness and even saw his car getting hit and the drunk going into his house. Laura and I walked up to the front door. It was slightly ajar. I knocked and yelled, "Police, we need to talk." There was no answer, so I pushed the door halfway open and spotted the drunk standing in front of a couch sipping from a long-neck beer bottle. I stepped into the room about 10 feet keeping my distance from the drunk and said, "We had a report that you drove into someone's car. Why don't you put the bottle down and come outside so we can talk?" "Fuck you," he answered. I continued, "Hey, don't be that way. I'm just doing my job. Put down the beer and let's talk." "Not good," I thought as I saw the drunk reverse his grip on the bottle, so now he was holding the top of it in his hand. The beer bottle was now a club. I wasn't especially worried. The drunk was still 10 feet away from me. I tried again. "Come on, pal, just put. Freeze, asshole, or you're dead," Laura yelled. I reached for my gun and turned at the same time. A man was behind me with a raised baseball bat in his hand. Laura was behind him with her gun out. "What?" I thought, and then I knew. I never checked behind the door, and I never pushed it all the way open. Rookie fucking mistake dot shit. I berated myself. I stepped away from both men, turned to the drunk with the beer bottle, and said, "Put the fucking beer down now, or you'll be hurting for only a month if you're lucky." He put it down. An hour later the paperwork was done, the prisoners transported by another unit to jail. When I realized how close it had been, the shakes had started. Finally, the shakes disappeared until the next time. Laura and I were getting into our unit. She was putting the key in the ignition when I reached over and grabbed her wrist. She looked at me. I said, "I fucked up, Laura. It happens to all of us. If it weren't for you, my ass was toast." "Thanks." She flashed a grin that turned her face beautiful and said, "My FTO did a great job of showing me how to do the job, especially how to back up a partner. I guess he deserves a thank you too. Doesn't he, partner?" I gave her wrist a squeeze and let go. Afterward I thought, squeeze shit, I should have given her a kiss. A few days later Tom called me into his office. He asked for Laura and me to go on a stakeout of a suspected drug manufacturing operation. We were especially hoping to catch the head guy who had evaded arrest for years. If we could arrest him at the drug plant, it would be a major bust. Obviously, we would be wearing civilian clothes for the stakeout. That night Laura met me at the station. She was wearing a light sweater with a V-neck that was cut fairly low, showing more skin than her uniform ever did. She was wearing a matching skirt. I wore slacks and a knit shirt. We took my personal car and went to the stakeout. The suspected place was in the middle of an older section of town that had blocks of two-story apartments, each identical to the one next to it, with the only difference being the brick color. We pulled over and parked about 50 feet from the building, turned out the lights and relaxed. It was Laura's first stakeout, and she was excited. I hoped it was my last stakeout, and I was not excited. We sat there sipping coffee from a big thermos that I had brought along. The hours passed and nothing. Nature and the coffee called, and I told Laura I was taking a walk. I walked into the nearby alley and pissed away. An hour later Nature called Laura. I said, "The nearest gas station is about 3 blocks away. The alley is right behind us." She thought for a second and asked, "Do you need anything from the gas station?" I replied, "A chocolate donut sounds good." She came back with my donut. That was the most exciting part of the night. 2 hours later our shift ended. The next night was a repeat. Laura was much less excited as hours went by. At one point she yawned. I said, take a nap. I'll wake you if anything happens. She nodded her head and leaned against the door. Minutes later her breathing slowed and she slept. I watched the apartment. I also watched her breasts as they moved up and down with her breathing. The skin between the V was highlighted by the moon. It was a somewhat erotic scene. I had a large erection, but no one saw it. The third night was another repeat. If this was a drug operation, it was a very mysterious one. We sat and talked for the first couple of hours. Just as I was thinking that all stakeouts were boring, I looked in the rearview mirror. Walking towards us were two men, one of them was the big shot. They would walk right by the car, we would stick out like pimples on a teenager's face. I said to Laura, they are coming up behind us on our side of the street. Don't look back. The only thing we can do is start making out. You watch them as they come up to the car, and I will watch them when they pass. Laura said, line of duty, right? I replied, just start kissing. She leaned over and we started to kiss. Her lips warm against mine. The angle must have been difficult. She knelt on the car seat and continued the kiss even harder. I circled her back with her arms and pulled her closer. I felt her breasts pressing against my chest. She whispered, they are almost even with the car. She went back to kissing me. Duty or no duty, my erection was at full mast. The feel of her lips on my lips and her breasts against me were impossible to ignore. I was tempted to test her with my tongue, but some instinct told me that maybe that might be pushing it. She whispered, they are past. I saw them continue down the street. Laura continued to lightly kiss me, but her part of the show was over. They stopped, looked both ways down the street, and walked into the drug house. I said, show's over, Laura, we got them. She broke the kiss and was sitting back down on the seat as her hand grazed my lap. Bam, her hand hit my erection. There was nothing to say, so I said nothing. Laura also managed to say nothing. The two nothings hung in the air. The sexual tension was hard to avoid. I finally said, we better call it in. An hour later, special operations raided the house. It was a drug manufacturing operation and the kingpin was arrested with everyone else. Always looking for good public relations, the media had been tipped at the last moment before the raid. They were there in force immediately after the raid. A microphone picked up the head man's voice as he said, it was the fucking kissing cops. We were heroes for maybe about 2 minutes, but then the kissing jokes started. Laura was particularly upset about the jokes. I told her that it would pass as soon as it was someone else's turn to be the butt. I was wrong. The kissing jokes continued. Tom O'Malley was the worst. He was a big 6'4" Irish cop that weighed close to 275 pounds. He felt it was his job to tell anyone that would listen every joke ever made about kissing. I talked to O'Malley about easing up, but he ignored me. He said, I'm just having fun. There is nothing wrong with jokes. Laura continued to be pissed. 2 days later she walked in before the start of our shift. She was smiling. I could see that she was in a great mood. I asked, what's with you? She answered, I just realized that I was looking at the jokes the wrong way. O'Malley is right. Jokes can be funny. The sergeant gave the word that the pre-shift meeting would start in 5 minutes. We assembled into the squad room and sat down. Teresa, Harry's secretary, passed out a sheet of paper that was the agenda that the Harry would follow. Somewhat out of the ordinary, Teresa went to each person and gave them the agenda sheet. When I got mine, I saw in bold letters, does Talcum Tom know the difference between talcum powder and itching powder? Talcum Tom was O'Malley's nickname. He was so large that his legs often chafed if he had to do any significant amount of walking. So before he put his uniform on for each shift, the last thing he did was to sprinkle talcum powder over his crotch and between his legs so prevent the chafing. Talcum Tom was sitting in the first row as the meeting started. Harry began to talk, but the squad was watching Tom. After 2 minutes we saw his hand gradually go to his crotch and scratched a little bit. Seconds later he did it again. One of the guys started to laugh but stopped when the Harry looked at him. It soon became obvious that Talcum Tom was in agony. The back of his neck was beet red and sweat was rolling down. He suddenly stood up and roared, God damn it to hell, while his hands assaulted his crotch. The squad room was laughing tears, and then Tom realized that the female's officers were watching him scratch his balls. He ran from the room. Harry asked, what the hell is going on? That started the second round of laughing. One of the cops waved the sheet at the Harry who read it. He kept a poker face for a moment, and then he started laughing. Harry finally said, okay, you assholes, start the shift. Laura and I walked through the room on the way to checking out a car. The talcum powder jokes were already starting. O'Malley was not in sight. We got into the car and I said, Laura. She answered innocently, what? I said, you know what? Laura grinned and said, Teresa gave me the extra master key for the locks in the men's locker room. It's empty during third shift, so making the switch was easy. Teresa printed up the agenda. Tom's agenda didn't have that one extra line. The kissing joke era was over for everyone but me. I couldn't forget the kissing. Laura and I had been teamed up for 6 months now. Harry called us into his office. He obviously was upset, but got right into it. The mayor's son had his leg broken by the goons of a local loan shark. The mayor was outraged, which meant the police commissioner was outraged, which meant that the captain's dot, and so on. Harry said, the loan shark guy has been doing it for 20 years. He is two bit, but we never get complaints about him. His goons are above average, they scare, but they never put people in the hospital. Witnesses said that the kid actually took a swing at the goons and broke his leg trying to run away. It doesn't matter. We are supposed to spy on him for a month to see who works for him and catch him in anything else he is doing, and then bust him. You too win the prize. Collection Day is every Friday night at the Lone Sharks nightclub. It is a high-class bar and dance room that is very popular. People come and go all night, which is how he gets his business done. For the next 4 Friday nights, spend the evening there and watch who talks to him. We will show you pictures the next day, and you can point out the people who talk to him. After a month of that, we will arrest him and anyone else we can prove is associated with him. At most, he gets maybe 6 months. What a waste of time, but that's the orders. If there are no questions, have fun dancing. Central is paying for your booze on this one, so drink the expensive stuff. The following Thursday, Laura and I talked logistics. We finally decided that I would pick her up at her house and from there we would drive to the club. She had checked out the club with her friends. She confirmed that it really was a classy place, and that we had better dress appropriately. Friday night came and I rang the doorbell at Laura's house. The door opened and her father said, "Come in, Joe, she's still getting dressed." We talked about the good old days until I heard her coming down the stairs. I looked at my partner and froze. She was wearing a black form-fitting dress cut down to the mounds of her breasts, 2 skinny straps connected to the material that if they broke she would be topless. The dress ended at mid-thigh, showing more leg than it was hiding. I was looking at more skin than clothes. She said defensively, "Well, it is a high-class place." I stammered, "Hey, no complaints here," Mike said. "The job sure has changed from my days." I said, "Laura, we better get going," Mike said. "Joe, keep your hands above the waist." Laura blushed violently red and said, "Dad, you are a dirty old man." I repeated, "Laura, we better going." And we left. We arrived at the club and the valet took the car. We walked into the place and it was pretty crowded, but not full. I spotted our lone shark and saw an empty table not far from where he was sitting. I led Laura over to the table and we settled in. The waitress took our drink, ordered the good stuff just like the sergeant ordered, and relaxed. We had our first sip when I thought of something. I leaned over to Laura and whispered, "Are you carrying?" She said, "Yes." I asked, "Where?" She grinned and said, "If you find it, I'll slap you silly." There was no good answer to that, so I said, "Let's dance." We stood up and walked by the loan shark. He was doing a crossword puzzle at the table. 2 big guys sat with him looking bored to death. It was a slow song, and as we reached the dance floor, she came into my arms. Her head rested on my shoulder. Her hair smelled wonderful, and as she relaxed, her breasts pressed into me. I thought, what a way to make a living. She is beautiful. A mind reader, she looked at me and grinned, and then returned her head to my shoulder. The song ended. We started back to the table. As we reached the loan shark, I heard him say, 5-letter word for connection. Do either of you idiots know what the answer is? I heard Laura say loudly, Nexus, it means a connection. The loan shark looked up and said, Why, thank you very much, pretty lady. It has to be that because I needed something with an X. As we sat down, Laura said, We are here for a month, so we might as well get familiar. I had my doubts until minutes later the loan shark yelled to Laura. 8-letter word meaning dull. Laura thought for a second and yelled back, Lethargy. The loan shark looked down and then yelled back, That's it. The next round of drinks, the waitress said, was on the loan shark. We danced all night. By the last dance, we had progressed from hand to hand to Laura's arms around my neck and my arms around her back, maybe closer to her ass than her back. I had an erection or 2 or 3. Laura obviously felt me, but politely ignored my reoccurring difficulties. In between dances, the loan shark yelled the crossword clues and Laura usually had the answer. We were one big, happy family. We did, however, watch who came up to the loan shark so that we could recognize their picture the next day. We were working after all. I carefully drove Laura back to her house. It would be a disaster if 2 on-duty police officers were pulled in for DUI. I walked her to her front door. I looked at her and, seeing no better option, leaned over and kissed her. She returned it. The next day, we looked at pictures and pointed out the people we saw the night before. The week passed quickly. We were on normal street patrol. Friday came and I was ringing Laura's doorbell again. Mike opened the door and said, Come on in, she is still dressing. We talked cop talk for a few minutes and then I heard Laura come down the stairs. I turned and looked, and for the second Friday in a row, I stared. It was a dress, kind of. The top part of her dress showed bare shoulders and some halter top to cover her breasts. Then skin showing her slim, tight muscled stomach, finally more material starting at her waist and stopping mid-thigh. She said, Dad, don't you dare say a word. Joe and I are on duty, and this dress is part of the job. So don't be a smartass. Mike looked at her and said quietly, You are beautiful, just like your mother. I said, We better get going. For the first 5 minutes of the drive, Laura was quiet. Her dad's words had gotten to her. We walked into the club. It was full, so we stood at the bar and had our first drink. The loan shark was at his normal table. We talked for a while and then I felt a touch on my elbow. It was a waitress. She said, The people over there are leaving and the owner has reserved the table for you and your date. When they leave, I will get you. Minutes later, we were sitting at the table next to the loan shark. He grinned at us and said to Laura, I'm stuck, 4-letter word and the clue is brief passing words. She stopped and thought. Finally, she grinned and said, Obit. He looked at his puzzle and nodded. He raised his voice and looked at the two bored men sitting with him, and said, "The lady has the right answer again, you idiots are worthless." We ordered a second drink and I asked Laura to dance. We made it to the dance floor, and she came into my arms once again. This time my right hand felt nothing but bare skin. Mr. Erection came back in force. It would be a long night, but someone had to do it. It was the last dance. Her arms were around my neck. My hands were on her back pulling her to me. My erection was pushing against her pelvis, and maybe, I thought, her pelvis was pushing back. At her front door the kiss lasted much longer. Two more Fridays of bliss. Two more dresses, each as daring. Our last Friday came and Laura was back to a two-piece dress, leaving everything bare between her breasts and her waist. The table was now reserved for us. Our club was fun, and our dancing almost sensual. Laura continued to help out our loan shark with his crossword puzzles. I walked her up to her front door on that last Friday after a night of fun. She turned and looked at me. We kissed. Her arms around my neck, my hands on her naked back. And then my hands took over, sliding up her bare sides until I reached her breasts. My hands cupped her breasts, my thumbs lightly pressing her nipples through her halter top. She broke the kiss and stared at me. Moments later, she brought her mouth back to mine again. Our tongues dueled for the next 3 minutes, my hands gently squeezing her proud breasts, my thumbs exciting her nipples for those same 3 minutes. Reluctantly remembering Mike's words, my hands stayed above her waist. I never found her gun. We finally said goodnight to each other. The Monday following the last Friday, Harry called us into the office. He said, "Your job is done. We know everybody who works for him because of your work. But don't be surprised if nothing happens. The mayor's son was busted last night for hit and run and DUI. He would make a terrible witness against the goons who broke his leg and the whole thing smells. My guess is that we will let the loan shark alone. Since you are both here, I'll give you your reward for a job well done. That booze bill you submitted to Central for expenses would choke a horse. We have two prisoners that need to be picked up at Rolling Water Prison. They are both punk teenagers caught on possession. They made a deal that if they testify against the distributor, their time is cut in half. We agreed. They need to be in court tomorrow at 1 o'clock. You and Laura fly down this afternoon and bring the prisoners back on the morning flight. Teresa already made the plane and room reservations. Joe, this time drink the cheap stuff. Metro West is paying the expenses on this one." We each headed home to pack and agreed to meet at the airport. Things went fine. The plane was on time, we landed on time, and the motel actually had our reservations. We decided to eat at the motel bar where sandwiches and not much else was served. I was sitting at the table as Laura came into the room. She was wearing our kissing sweater. She looked beautiful. We ate and drank a couple of beers and talked. Laura was happy that her friendly little loan shark was given a walk. She knew she couldn't tell him anything, but I could tell she liked the old guy. I was happy to be with Laura. I paid the bill and we left the motel restaurant, taking an exit that led outside to our rooms. I reached for her hand and she took it. We walked slowly to my room. Her room was two doors farther down. The sexual tension was thick as we tried to talk to each other for those last 50 feet. Nothing intelligent came out. We stood outside my motel room door. She looked at me and we kissed. My tongue found her tongue. My hands pulled her body into mine. The kiss finally ended and I turned to open the door with the plastic key. The door lock clicked and I pushed the door open with her one hand. My other hand held hers. I pulled her hand gently. She followed me into the room. The door closed behind us. The lock clicked shut. Laura faced me and looked into my eyes. She had a grin on her face, but said nothing. My hands went to the bottom of our kissing sweater and, looking at her, pulled it over her head. Laura kept looking at me, her grin never stopping. I reached behind her back and her bra was released. It fell to the floor. She stood there proudly. Her breast jutted from her chest without any sag. Her areola circled her tiny nipples, which had begun to harden as the cool air of the air conditioning hit the heat of her nipples. I cupped her breasts, and then leaned over and kissed the top of each breast, and then each nipple. Her hands went to my shirt. She undid the buttons and pulled it from me. We were equal, both naked from the waist up. Laura's hands went to my belt. It opened and my pants fell to the floor. I reached behind her and undid the one button and pulled the zipper down. Her skirt followed my pants to the floor. I stepped forward and kissed her hard. My tongue tried to explore every inch of her mouth while her tongue did the same. I pulled her to the bed and we lay down on our sides facing each other. My hands went to her breasts again as I covered them and I said, "Partner, I think I love you." She smiled and answered, "Think?" I answered her with a kiss to her forehead, then her nose, then her lips. I pushed her gently so that she was laying flat on her bed as my tongue teased her chest, and then her breasts, and finally her nipples. She whimpered quietly. I put my mouth over her nipple and sucked. She gasped with pleasure. Minutes went by as I teased her upper body. Every inch of her smooth skin was touched by my hands or my tongue. My hands and mouth found her belly button. My tongue teased it as my fingers went to her panties. I slipped them under the elastic, and then I looked at Laura, through her breasts with the hard nipples to her eyes. She said, "Anything you want, I want Joe." I stripped her now very wet panties from her. My shorts quickly followed. My mouth went to her hips and then her thighs. I heard the quick intake of her breath as I licked and teased her inner thighs. She spread her legs wider without my direction. She was asking for me. I smelled her sweat and her sex. It was an overpowering sensory overload as she moaned with pleasure. My fingers went to her vulva, separating her labia, and then my finger went into her. she gasped with pleasure. Then a second finger. My fingers explored her vagina as my tongue pleasured her wet insides. I saw her clitoris swollen waiting for my tongue. She was quietly begging now. Nonsensical words pleading for release. My tongue performed. Teasing was over. I entered her quickly, penetrating deeply into her, and then trying to go even deeper. The lust contest began. I tried to move more into her. She tried to take more of me into her. Our rhythm matched, and her hips violently arched into me. As she came, I released myself. Pulse after pulse of my sperm burst into her. Her body arched one more time and she lay quiet. The contest for now was over. I kissed her mouth gently, my mouth sucking her lower lip and then releasing her for another kiss. Her hands touched my shoulders, gently squeezing them as if she had an aftershock of sexual emotion. Then, even that stopped. I rose up on one elbow and looked at her. She was asleep. The next morning I quietly slipped from our bed as Laura slept. I went into the bathroom, took care of business and had a shower. I knotted the towel around my waist and opened the bathroom door. I thought of a silly saying that described this situation. If she looks away, she feels guilty. If she looks at you, it's love. She heard the door open. She sat up and let the bedsheet fall from her. Her naked breasts were pointing at me. More important, my Laura was looking at me. I walked up to her and said, I hope you slept well. Without speaking her first word, she stood up and kissed me. During the kiss, her fingers had found the loose knot of the towel. It fell to the floor. She guided me to the bed and had me sit on the edge. My erection was back. She knelt and held me between her fingers as her tongue licked my entire length, and then again. Her hands gently caressed my balls. Finally showing mercy, she took me into her mouth. As my erection got bigger, and the arousal demons took control of me, only one thing was constant. She looked into my eyes and never looked away. I came in her mouth, and she swallowed all that I had. We took a shower together, and then dressed. Laura's clean clothes were still waiting for her in her motel room. As we were about to leave the room, I said, one more kiss. She kissed me. I said, it will be a shame that we can't be partners anymore. I saw confusion in her eyes, and then fear. I continued, department policy says that when two offices marry from the same division, one of them must go to another division. Her eyes went from fear to understanding. They missed it, and then she was crying happy tears down her cheeks. She came to me for another kiss. This one lasted much, much longer. The end. This podcast is part of the Erotica Podcast Network. Please visit our other podcasts. Their links are in the description of this episode. Both the Erotica Podcast and the Erotica Taboo Podcast offer $2 subscriptions with bonus episodes.